Well, hey, good morning or afternoon or evening or whatever it is, wherever you are at the moment. My guest today, it is nighttime in New South Wales, but it's morning over here. So we're covering both ends of the globe in both time zones, or both extremes of time zones. So I have with me Dave Henderson from Hop and Clover Brewing in Mudgee, New South Wales, Australia. Now, before I'll let you know, because you won't be able to recognize it, but Dave is not actually an Australian. You'll be amazed at his accent, so it'll be hard for you to figure it out. So, Dave, where exactly are you from?
So, from Derry originally, born and bred, you know, and I left when I was 18. I went and joined the Navy, and then probably 13, I would have done about just short of 12 years. I transferred across to the Australian Navy.
Okay.
That was my sort of, I was one of the boat people, you could say, almost, you know. But I pretty much just jumped the queue, you know. And within 3 months of being here, I got a passport, I got a diplomatic passport, and engineering background, you know. So I was a marine engineer, and now I had no idea why I got into that, except for a career teacher at school told me, "You should join the Navy, son. You're up to all sorts of trouble." He says, his words exactly were, "I've had a really good week on one of the ships, and all we'd done was party. That's exactly where you want to go." So that was me, you know, locked in, and to this day, I still work for Navy as well. So I still do part-time what they call reserve work. So, but very much not on ships as much. I'm moving into like infrastructure in the States. So yeah, look, out of all of that, obviously I got involved in brewing whilst I was in the Navy too, up in Darwin, you know, bored out of my head, too hot to go outside. What else would a dairyman do? And think, well, let's make some beer. You know, so, and that was all the extract kits and stuff, you know, it was a real basic setup. But yeah, that was the start of it, and then someone brought me an all grain kit and off it went, you know. And as we've mentioned before, it would have been about 2017 we, you know, registered the business number for Hop and Clover, and here we are still surviving, like, you know. But I'm probably not as fast as and flamboyant as some of the others, you know. I'm just, I believe in just keep making beer, you know, and keep making a better beer, and, you know, just really just simplify, make sure there's no stress, you know, make sure I enjoy it, because then your passion and everything comes through naturally, you know.
Because you kind of opened the brewery by accident, almost.
Yeah. So it all goes back to, I actually was away with the Navy doing an evacuation of an island called Ambe Island. There was a volcano eruption, and we were evacuating all the people onto an island, onto Vanuatu. And, yeah, essentially I raised this in one of my mates on there, and essentially, you know, I'd done 2 weeks of that. I come home and got a phone call saying, "Hey, we're Channel 7, we're coming, we want to come around to yours tonight." I hung up straight away, going, he's pulling my leg, you know, so I'm taking the piss here, like. So I walked straight into work, and I started looking at people going, "Right, what's going on?" And they were all, because they hadn't seen me for 2 weeks, they go, "Huh." And then they start laughing, so I automatically think they're all guilty, but they're just laughing because of my reactions. I don't know what, you know, I've got no idea. Anyway, I thought about it, and went, "Oh, might that call's come back again." So I took it, and Channel 7 basically said, "Look, we want to come and do a sunrise breakfast show at your property and have a look at this backyard brewing setup and stuff, you know." I was like, "Okay, fair enough, you know." So they come that evening, they come around, and they done the drinking shots and stuff, you know, because I couldn't do that at 7:30 in breakfast show. And they breathalyzed me on the way in the gate, you know, and I think they were lining me up too. They were like, as soon as you know, so we'd done that shoot that night, but as soon as I come through the next day, they were like, "But you were drinking on there." And I said, "But that was last night, so, you know, it's not quite, it's, you know." But they'd done a live stream then in the morning, and I had all talking away and laughing, and my wife was there involved and the kids, and we went down and looked at the gear. Like, it was just a 200 liter Blickman system, you know. But like I say, I went out thinking it was just a little bit of a homebrew gear and came back with a brewery. So the title goes Northern Ireland man cheats wife into brewery. So I'm not sure how that got lost in translation. Maybe I do have a bad accent in the translation, you know. So but look, that was our segue. It went on Gumtree, Facebook, Belfast Telegraph. My mum's reading the Belfast Telly, like she gets every day. She had no idea I was doing this, and all of a sudden she's reading page three. Now, page three in a newspaper sometimes means something else, but I had my top on, so thank you very much. But yeah, there was one big tit on the page three, and that was me. So my mum's like, phone me up, going, son, you're famous. And I said, no, mum, I'm in the shit. So yeah, it was all of that sort of stuff all happened at once, made it to China, America. It was all these different, you know, blogs and stuff, and the brewer, home brewer, beer and brewer magazine. Okay. And on to that. Look, and that's where we sort of went, hey, we can have a laugh about this, or let's try and push it to the level, you know. And we did get good feedback in our beers even before then. And people say, oh, that's a really nice Irish red, because I was always pushing my that side of things, you know. But I was trying to Aussie-fy all my sort of beers rather than being stouts. And, you know, it's the climate we're in, you just can't do that. You know, it's too hot. So you need to lighten, lift it, you know, make it a little bit more refreshing rather than heavy, stodgy, creamy stuff that we're used to back home.
And so it just went from, like, you bought the brewery, or you bought what you thought was a homebrew kit, you ended up somehow or other world famous, and then it was just like, okay. So, but at that stage, were you living? I'm not clear. Were you living in Mudgee already at that stage, or were you?
I was in Sydney, a place called Bexley. Just south of Sydney, not far. And it's funny, like, they had the big van with the antenna, and everyone's like looking up the street, going, "What's going on here?" You know, is he? Bubble or something, but there's no police cars, and it was just a news van, you know. And then I got the crew, they got involved, and I'm starting to give them samples of beer too. So I think the camera crew were very happy, you know, they were just getting lubed up, you know. So, like I said, we sort of stepped back from it all and went, look, we can have a laugh. And we went through the little steps of just getting the license, and it was all slow. Our first year, for example, would have been, let's just sell a keg, one keg.
Right.
You know, realistic achievements.
Yeah, and goals. It wasn't your full-time job then, basically.
No. It was funny, like, one of the breweries we went into to do our first brew, we wanted to be there brewing with them. And there were sort of bigwigs, and I'll not name anyone, but, you know, they've got hope in their name somewhere. They essentially brewed it without us even being there, and I was devastated. Like, and then they sent the kegs to a pub that I didn't even arrange to have these kegs. I'm still waiting to ask the guy, you know. And these kegs have turned up, and it's all happened like within days. And I'm like, whoa. And then I had to move my kegs from that pub. He was very upset because it was raining when they turned up, so he got wet. So I had to move them then to another cellar at a golf club. And so it wasn't an ideal start, you know, but as I said, I put my hand up to the guy and said, look, I'll own this, but I had no idea that they were coming. I didn't even know they were brewed until yesterday. So, you know, it just all happened within, you know, we thought it'd be a month or two before we come in. And then we had a tap takeover at a little brewery called Flat Rock Brewing in North Sydney. And we had a queue of about 150 people just queuing up the street trying to come in. And essentially, we brewed the beer at this brewery, and he just gave us, he was real nice offer, and he gave us to do the tap takeover and the kickoff of Hop and Clover. We had a Chuck Cherry Stout, we had a ginger beer, we had the pale ale, you know, on tap, and an Irish red. So we literally were great little numbers to sort of start out with. So that was our sort of kickoff. And then I think the second year we might have sold 24 kegs. The next, you know, it was just baby steps, you know. And I remember running around all the pubs trying to give them samples, and them going, "Yes, please," and never. I don't think I succeeded with anyone that drank the nothing to do with the beer, but it was more to do with contracts and stuff. And that's where I learned. As soon as I walk in the pub, what I see on the tap, I'll just walk out.
Right.
You know, because there's no chance.
Yeah.
No. And in fact, the Irish pubs are probably the most difficult. It's so hard. It's so heavily contracted.
Yeah, so, they do a lot of, I presume it's the same over there, like where they'll kind of provide all the furnishings and stuff, and then you're tied into a...
Mm.
Yeah, so you were... Oh, that's not one of your own, though, you said.
No, it's one of my favourites. It's a really nice beer called the Colonial Brewing Company. So beautiful beers. Good drop.
Okay. I'm like I said, it's early morning here, so I'm still on coffee. So. So like you, what it sounds like is though you went direct to contract brewing, even though you had the kit. Was it because the kit was still not enough, or how come you
the time? No, we were short of. We brought our kit to the Flat Rock Brewery, for example, and we would do small batches of ginger beer there and stuff, you know. So we were doing certain types, but, you know, to get like the pale ale going, and, you know, we thought, let's get the 20 kegs and that'll keep us going for, you know, let's get that 1,000-liter batch.
Okay.
And they would cover for a bit of duration, even if it was 6 months, you know, they last a year. So, but yeah, the first beer we released was supposed to be a pale ale, but we underhopped it. And it was came out really bitter, so we called it the bitter ale. And funny enough, all the taps were just there's so many pale ales that the bitter ale was like, oh, this is different. Let's get that on tap and give it a go. And that took off really well.
Okay, so I mean, that's a thing for a lot of brewers that, you know, everybody's producing IPAs and that, but, you know, something a little bit different can kind of, people are looking for something a bit different as well a lot of the time. So.
So myself and my wife Cherie, the boss, we literally just invested $10,000 into that, roughly, you know. That was the start of it, and we've just let it go back in, and obviously added a bit here and there for other costs. You know, you get your license costs, you got your insurances, your accountants, and all that sort of stuff, you know. But there's no. Even to this stage, it's no more expensive than a golf hobby, you know.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, but at least this is growing.
Yeah, and it's I don't know. I suppose, like, if you're I've never been hugely into golf, but hobby. But you know, if you're doing it, it's there and it's gone. You've experienced it, but at least you have something you're making and that you can kind of see people enjoying. That's a huge difference.
Yeah, and absolutely. And initially it was all the novelty was good doing beer festivals and that's sort of gone, but I still enjoy doing them, but for a better reason, you know, not just for getting out and getting amongst different, you know, actually that's all sort of pushed to the wayside now. It's all about making sure our beers are the highest quality, you know, and as you said, making sure the consumers are smiling.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't really want them. I'm not bothered. People always go, oh, they want to get awards. And I think myself and Cherie both would agree on this, that we just wanted to be under the radar, a bit humble, a bit modest, and just let it find its way, you know, naturally without pushing it.
Yeah.
So,
I always have not a suspicion, but like, you know, every brewery seems to have awards. It seems to be, you know, if you go to the right place, you get an award and that's it. So they don't really mean anything, you know.
I done one once, and they were supposed to, oh, we'll give you really good feedback. And my feedback was like, yeah, that's fine. I was like, I never went, I've never touched a bloody, you know, contesting or competition again. I was just like, nah, you know what? Half the time, popularity contest, and it's about who knows who. And look, if they're drinking your beer and it's the 20th, they're not going to get anything out of it, you know. So at the end of the day, the, you know, data will tell you if your beer's moving and it's getting better and better and better and better and better. That to me is the real data, you know. That's the award, you know.
Yeah.
So
And so how does that tie in with Mudgee then? Like, you moved from Sydney into, I don't know how big Mudgee is. I'd never heard of it before I came across you. But like, you seem to be very focused now on being kind of a local brewery. So I just wonder how that changed things.
So I'll give you a quick intro as well on the Mudgee world. So I was in an Irish pub in Sydney called The Mercantile. And I might have been a little bit, loose on the dance floor, and I might have made some really good moves. And I think Cherie fell for me. So she convinced the sailor to move 4 hours inland to Mudgee.
Right.
And I was like, still confused a wee bit. You know, I'm like, what am I doing here? But, lo and behold, I really do enjoy it. It's a good change, you know, and it's very progressive. It's very innovative, very sophisticated little country town. You know, a lot of them are quite sleepy. But Mudgee just seems to have that age where they support small business. They support, growth. I think there's a couple of thousand businesses, and there's only 22,000 people roughly in the region, you know. So there's loads of little people just working on loads of different things, and we're always looking at how to improve it. They communicate well, they work well together, they collaborate. We do festivals together. You know, we do a big street festival called the Flavor of Mudgee, where all the wineries, the breweries, all the craft, all the food, all the that produce, raw produce, is a big party on the street. You know, it's one of my favorite days, to be quite honest, you know.
Right.
They don't allow big shopping malls to move in either.
Okay.
So you don't have the stores that take out and wipe out small business.
Yeah.
They pro small business. They've got a good mayor. He also owns a pub, and he has my beer on tap. So when you're in with the mayor,
yeah, it's all sorted.
My mission in life, and the guys at work always say, I'm the mayor of Mudgee, the future mayor of Mudgee. And I said, right, that's a challenge. I want to be the mayor of Mudgee. So
you're settled down there now, and you've been there a few years, and
been there now 3.5, 4 years.
But how did it change your beer or your brewing or your approach to like, are you more so, there's a lot of local stuff. So are you kind of doing a lot more with local ingredients? Are you focusing that sort of, or did it kind of change anything at all?
Good question as well. We actually have tried to grow our own acre of barley, third time. And this time, the first time it was a mouse plague, the second time it was destroyed by the floods. This time it grew perfect, but I couldn't get a combine harvester willing to come down and do an acre for me. So I was sort of, they were all chasing the 10, 20, 100 acres, not the little mini acre would take them 3 seconds to cut. So, and then by the time I got round to, we had a wet spell and it got moldy. So I had to let it go. But so that was my crack at trying to be a local producer. But that was a sailor trying to be a farmer. Didn't go to plan. You know, I didn't look at my toolbox properly and go, where's that combine harvester? Where's my header? You know, it was essentially I'm the header that didn't know what he was doing. So.
Yeah,
I've been brewing at one of the local breweries there as a gypsy brewer, and I was doing that in Sydney before, and it was costing me a bit of money for transport and, you know, working within their breweries. Now the one up there in Mudgee, I've managed to streamline my raw materials better.
Okay.
I've got better, lower transport costs, and it's full hands-on. You know, before I would have just helped brew it, but not got involved in the packaging, you know, that side of it. So now I'm like from the cradle to the keg now, you know. So that's the difference. I've really honed in on my own skills and my own ability, you know, on understanding. And the big challenge coming from Sydney to Mudgee, I was worried about the water quality and stuff. But you know what? I just stuck to the plan and just done it as I would, you know. And the little brew house, which did have a bad reputation for a while, they're doing really, before even I got there, they've started to turn a corner and they're doing really well. So and they're supporting me.
Yeah, sorry. I just wondering, like, are they brewing their own stuff and you're kind of the only other client, or do they focus on a lot of...
They've got another guy too, Josh, and his name's brewery, Zigzag Brewery. And he's similar to me. He's gypsy brewing as well at the minute, but he's got plans to move in. And he's got a venue and everything, but he's just waiting for all the legalities and the agreements and stuff. You know, it can take quite some time. So good on him. He's getting in there and building that foundation. Young lad, only 24, proper, you know, really switched on young fella and very determined. So actually, he's an inspiration to me. I'm 45, but I'm just watching him and his sort of eagerness to, I'm like, that's good. It's helping me along too, you know?
Yeah.
So we bounce off each other, and probably more I bounce off him for a bit of guidance on that system, because he was brewing on it for quite some time before me. So it's good to get the guidance, and, you know, yeah. It's funny, there's no buttons in this system. It's valves and a pump switch. That's it. So it's proper grassroots brewing system. But it's electric steam, so it's a great cook, you know, it cooks so well. Doesn't scorch. I find a lot of electrical ones, you know, when it's elements, they scorch, and you're always cleaning elements, scrubbing them back. Well, this one here, jacketed steam, beautiful. It's actually, I've been in a lot of breweries, and I'm really taken to this one, so I'm very happy at the minute with that, you know.
And then you're brewing there how often? Like, do whatever you
want. Probably once a month, you know. And it's funny, they only brew on Monday, Tuesday, because they open the restaurant at 12 on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we've really only got 2 days to get the hot, you know, the dirty work done.
Okay.
Look, we can egg and stuff when people are there, but I can. The brewery house is sort of inside the restaurant, so when you're sitting eating, you can look over at the sidewall and see all the tanks. And,
right.
You know, funny enough, it goes even deeper in the history books that it used to be a wool shed for the sheep shears.
Yeah.
And my father, well, Gandhi Phillips, his name is, he used to sell, like, I think it was possum skins and stuff he used to sell to there. And they have a big press for, you know, pressing the wool. And he now knows a lot of people and a lot of history and a lot of knowledge about what went on there before the brewery and even during the brewery, because there was talk of when the wool season was off, when the wool shearing, the sheep shearing was off season, they would make beer. So it's sort of potentially. Now, don't hold this to record. Like, it's more, that's why I'm trying to get this information together. And the father-in-law knows the owner, who's like 90 odd, you know, and he's willing to come in soon and sort of spill the beans for us on what happened, you know. So I'll tell you what, if it's anything to do with my father-in-law, there'll be a few beans to be spilled. I reckon he's a proper, he'd be all into everything back in the days, you know.
Right.
So,
some of those he mightn't want some of those stories to come out.
You know, we'd be sneaking sheepskins out or something, you know. Oh, didn't let that one slip, you know. But a lot of history there. So I'm keen to try and get that, you know, before it's too late. So that's probably something I want to try and focus on in the next few weeks. Even if we get them in for a quick beer, record.
Yeah.
Even if they don't want video, well, if we just get the voice, get that knowledge. So there's a lot of stuff there in behind the scenes. It's such a... You know, it's a good place to be, you know.
Right. And is that in the centre of the town then, or?
Right in the centre. And now they do call Mudgee the centre of the universe when you have people from Mudgee go, centre of the universe. And I used to run around going, where's this universe? Funny enough.
See, I dispute to know, being from Cork, I'd be kind of like, you know, Cork's the centre of the universe. So,
I'll tell you what, it's very similar to Ireland, you know, where there's always someone that knows someone from Mudgee.
Right.
Swear to God. I've been on a ship and I've had in a five berth, I've had three people. One went to the guy that slept above me, his sister went to school with my wife, you know, and I didn't know them. So this is all, this is like proper, I think it's backwards going forwards, you know.
Yeah, it sounds kind of familiar, all right. But yeah, it's always a bit of a shock when you come across those sort of connections. But
100%.
But I'm so yeah. Go on, sorry.
Yeah. I was just going to say last little bit of background as well. That it's not all about the making the beer. So behind the scenes, my wife would do all the branding, the graphic design side of things, and she would do all the posts on Instagram, Facebook. We don't really do many posts. We just like to post when we've got something to right. say. Or I think if I come across something funny, I might slap it in there too. But, we don't just like force feed and stuff. It's about, we just let you know when there's something happening. Yeah. There's something new, something's changed. And maybe a little holiday wishes here and there, But yeah, she puts a lot of hard work into doing the books and the background and stuff as well. So it's not just... I'm just the gobshite on the front,
Yeah. The real work's done elsewhere.
Exactly.
So, but you also started doing gin, or didn't you?
Yeah, so we contracted the gin, and it's from a distillery just down in Sydney here, just to try it out. But we've called it the Kennigo Bay gin, so the branding's called Sailor and Clover.
Okay.
And then we labeled it Kennigo Bay because that was my first watering hole, in Donegal. I used to go there and drink tea, in the beach and look at chickens running around and whatever else, but there wasn't many people there, that's for sure. It was too cold.
So, and is that's just kind of a side marketing, or is it was it just like giving it a chance, or what led to doing it?
It's more Cherie's idea, and I do agree. It buffers the beer a bit from gives it a bit of a boost. Right. The margin's quite low for beer sometimes, whereas the gin's quite, it's probably double almost, to what beer can be, depending on how you're selling. But look, we've had people come back looking for it all the time. It's elderflower, chamomile, and tea. And it's, I'm not a big gin fan normally, but I quite like it, even on the rocks, a wee nip of it on the rocks, But look, it sells well. We only do one batch a year, normally around Christmas. We just done one recently, and it sells out. It goes out real quick, real well, I just done 100 bottles to one of the naval ships as well. So I've done their own little label and stuff,
Right.
So they've got now their own gin, and I made a pallet's worth of beer for them too, with their own label. So when they go to foreign Pacific countries and stuff, they have cocktail parties.
Oh, all right.
And they can show. To me, it was more of a bucket list, a sentimental bucket list for me, as I've been in Navy all my life. So, but they asked me, I never forced it to them, But I've always been doing little car park sort of. Hey, you want a 4-pack? Sometimes, I found that 4-pack in the car, but been a few people so very supportive, and the local pubs around the base have my beer on tap too.
Okay.
So I take my clients there for if they want a quick beer after work, and then they end up drinking mine, and then the beers and the quickest beers.
But so are you selling mainly in Mudgee then, or is like you have some in the around the bases in Sydney, or like where's your distribution?
Cans and kegs, but compared to last year we were in quite a few bottle shops, but by the time you got paid you'd lost your margin, right. You're wasting your time, you're just chasing your tail all the time, and so I've dropped. Unless they're good and they pay well, I'll keep them going, but if they're not paying well, they're not getting it. That's as simple as that, And it's we've now streamlined to local. We do the markets, we do the festivals, online sales as well. So we're going to push online a bit harder this year and try and get direct sales. And then that way we manage cash flow better. And, I just find that chasing around after bottle shop.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I think I started doing that about a year ago, but a lot of the breweries now have pretty much copying. I'm not saying I'm a trendsetter, but I think when you're small like ourselves, you probably move that way before they would, because you see it coming.
Yeah.
You've got they've got more cloud in the way, you know, whereas we've got a clear vision and of how we're moving.
Yeah.
So essentially we're local, but I do push a bit on the Navy now. Well, since they've requested it, I'm working with them quite a bit as well. So yeah, that's sort of our looking, to be honest. If we get that bigger margin and I make less beer but I get more money, well, that's it.
Yeah.
This is us streamlining a natural instinct business model, where when we do get the moment to pull the trigger for the big step to the having a full blown brewery, we've already established the basics. You know, we've got that all going. So yeah. It's just a matter of, you know, open up, and then you've got your people coming in, you know.
Is that the plan to open your own brewery?
Look, I'd say yes, it's still a plan, but we're going to, this year we want to do a half step. So we would like to open a cellar door where I'll probably have four taps, for example, do tastings and takeaways, and then do just like ticketed events or special events, you know, a couple of festivals around the area, you know, where it may be located. We do have a few things. We've got a venue lined up potentially for that, but we're just in the negotiating stages and looking at it to see what work needs to be done to get it to a good standard of, you know, being open to public.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, I can see that probably in the next 6 months coming to fruition. And we'll just see where it takes us, you know. And it just means I probably have to give it a, like, you know, really jump in a bit further again. I'm very lucky. I still have Navy reserve days and stuff that I couldn't imagine opening a brewery now with big money, because you'd need deep pockets. You know, we're in a bad stage over here from, well, the globe is as well, but you know, the economy's tight, inflation's bad, interest rates are up,
yeah.
The price of gas, electric, so all them overheads. I'd rather, and this is why I'm happy to help out with the other breweries and feed stuff back into them, you know, because they need it. And yep. Mudgee's not going to be a brewery region with one brewery, you know, with a handful, it becomes a destination, you know, and that's, we've got to try and look after each other. And there is another three breweries in Mudgee as well, a physical one. So we generally work okay together. Like, there's always that wee bit of, oh, what are they up to, you know, but that's just natural competitiveness, you know. But I do see a bit of community there, you know. So
yeah, that's important.
Heard this, maybe a bit better in Mudgee, you know.
And yeah, so the other thing actually you can touch on it there, but we didn't actually discuss, was the beers themselves. So, like, what are you producing now, and what's selling, and just, you know.
So, I think we mentioned before, like, we've got our sort of core range would be the pale ale. I've got the mid-strength called the wee one. I've got an Irish red ale and the seasonal one. We've got a Pacific ale, as we just released last year. And that was meant to be the wee one, but full ABV, full strength. Now, my original Pacific I made in the can probably early last year would have been a bit more bitter, but I just made it for the kegs recently at the local brewery, and it's just come out delicious. So I'm really, really happy where it is. And it's going back to the origin a bit, you know, so it's going back to what it should have been. I think the reason I didn't get it there initially is the postman didn't turn up in time or something, you know, with the hops. So maybe lack of plan on my side, but sometimes as a gypsy brew, you've just got to get in when you can.
Yeah,
just, you know, you've just got to get in and make it happen, right? What have I got? Oh, let's think of an alternative, a good substitute. You know, and I've learned a lot on substituting, and sometimes it works, you know, you just slight tweak and you know. Hey, we're craft brewers. We're not Coopers or Heineken here, you know, where it's expected to be.
And like you said, you're able to just rebrand it if it's not quite what you want it to be. You call it something else.
Luckily, I haven't. I've done that once with the first one, but I haven't had to do it since. So that's a testament to what we're doing, you know. A little bit of quality control at the brewery, but I also always like benchmarking a jug. You know, I'll try and drink a jug of the beer,
okay,
and that's my benchmark, because that puts it into the four schooner, you know, or the whatever 3 pints, you know, range, yep, where you go, right, drink them and I'm feeling fine and, you know, I'm not bloated and, you know, so I try and, I might put out there for volunteers to come and drink a jug with me.
Okay.
You know, I'm sure a 1,000 people turn up, you know.
I'm sure you'll have a few, right? But is it all like you were mentioning, you know, temperature and how hot it is there and that you need something more refreshing. Does that apply? Is it kind of lower ABV more popular? Do they tend towards higher?
No, look, it's funny. Some of the beer nerds, we call them, the real craft beer drinkers, they like their big IPAs and stuff. But I think the general public are really heading down the other end. They're like in the mid-strengths, the light beers, and almost the zeros are turning,
yep,
you know. But I get a lot of people going, why aren't you making zero? And I says, well, do you want to? I've got some water on the back here if you want to try some, you know. But it's probably not my market. I don't have enough, you know, and I've no investors. I've got probably not enough backing to achieve that. Yeah, you know, that could be some 5 years down the line, you know. But I put an effort into making that mid strength called the wee one, and that's come out cracker. It's dry hop and everything, so it really comes out like it's a full beer, but it's only 3.5%. So it's definitely goes well in the sports clubs and whatnot, yep, you know. So, but the biggest seller would be the pale in the Pacific, and then the wee one sells well at like the sports events and stuff, you know. I would like to, this year, I would like to try and get into a couple more, like, you know, like a day at the races or something, you know. I feel like I want to try and push a bit harder at that and do maybe an extra market somewhere. Markets are fantastic. Like, it's, you know, between 8:30 in the morning and 12:30, I sell more beer than I would ever sell at a bottle shop in a year.
Really?
You know? Yeah, 100%. Because Munsey's quite a touristy place as well.
Okay.
So people coming through, and then I've got a good local following too, and they always come and get me little 4-packs and take them home, you know. So I do offer free delivery, but I think they're, you know, probably my wife Cherie scared that I might turn up and have a beer with them, you know. Never. So that's always a risk. Davey boy here likes to, as you can tell.
And is that going to apply also free delivery with your online sales? Are you going to be personally delivering it?
Well, you know what I always wanted to do? I always wanted to get a horse and cart. And my first, my maiden batch at my brewery, I want to get it delivered by a horse and cart. And that's just me. That's me. Wild and wonderful ideas, you know. I also to get one of them bicycles, you know, you pedal. People pedal and drink.
Oh, yeah, I've seen.
I want to get one of those for like a seasonal beer or brewery tours, you know. So now this, you know, what we're surviving as well is the key thing. We're agile, you know, no debt, no stress.
Yeah, well,
that's important to me. Especially, I've got three kids under 8, and I have an 18-year-old back in Derry as well. She's about to go to uni, so you know, so I've got my hands full.
Yeah, sounds like, yeah, I'm surprised you find time to do anything, really. Never mind brewing and a Navy job. So
I think the brewing is actually a good distraction. It's a bit of mindfulness, you know.
Yeah.
You're in the zone, you got new times, you gotta, you know, you gotta listen, you're listening for things, you're, you know, it's a I love, take some, you know, just disappear into the world of brewing. It's great.
Right, yeah. I think an awful lot of people feel the same way, really.
My home brewing don't exist anymore, you know.
Yeah.
Too many kids. I do miss that a wee bit, you know. There's a little bit of what I miss, but maybe years to come down the line, I might keep experimenting with different things, you know.
So how does that work, actually, if you're not home brewing? Like, when you decide you want to do a new type of beer, you don't go straight to the larger one. So do you do a home brew, or what do you...
I've done a few already, and I've just put the recipes aside for when I'm ready. And one of them would be like a traditional IPA. So instead of being this big hobby fruity number, I've gone the other way. The traditional was a bit more floral.
Okay.
And a bit more humble, like a modest, noble sort of drink, you know. So I'm keeping that up my sleeve, and then I'm probably going to do a stout for Paddy's Day this year, or I do my Irish Red again. I do have people asking for the Irish Red quite a bit. It's a smoky, malty toffee number, you know, real unique. It's not like traditional. I've Aussie-fied it. And it's definitely got it. A lot of the whiskey drinkers love it because it's got that peatiness to it.
Okay.
Yeah. So from the smoked malt.
Yeah.
So that tends to go very well. The other one I was just thinking of too, we do is a ginger beer. Now with the ginger beer, it's been hard this year to get it up and going because of the cost of it. Rocketed up, and I think a lot of breweries too, when they do the ginger beers, they just add artificial flavorings and stuff, you know. So I want to do the real thing. So I'm in discussions with the ginger producers in Queensland, and I'm asking them, can they get me a bulk price and send it down in one container, you know? So that should come back in packaging and whatnot. So they've sent me some samples. I might have a crack at that in the next few weeks and see how that turns out, you know, and see what product works best, you know, whether it's the syrup or whether it's the powder, but it's all from fresh ginger, like, you know.
Okay. So how do you plan that out then? Like, if you've got all these different beers, but you've got a very limited window in which you can brew each time, it's like, how do you make it so that you're not brewing the same beer, you know, your one most popular beer all the time? Like, how do you make the decisions?
It's funny. Like, when I'm on the markets, I tend to sell a lot of mixed packs, so they all move at the same rate.
Okay.
You know, it's all mixed six pack, two, two, and two.
Okay.
And generally, we have three beers out at the one time. And then, you know, come Paddy's Day, I'll do an Irish Red. I might even do a stout, you know, but that'll do me for the winter.
Okay.
And I'll push that all the way. But yeah, that's sort of how I'm doing it at the minute. And as I look, I go, oh, I've only got 7 cases left, and I do a lot of kegs. You know, I'm doing a keg, and maybe a keg and a half a week at the pubs now, you know, which is, and I'm fighting against 22 other taps, you know, so I'm up there in the top 5. And I've been there for 3 years, so that's another testament to itself, going, it's getting better, it's getting better, it's getting better, you know, but it's really slow. I guess I'm doing the tortoise sort of approach instead of the Ferrari, you know, but they all get there at the same time, but I think the tortoise gets to drink a few more beers, you know.
Well, yeah, I hadn't thought about it in that term, but it's the same thing. It's like, like I said, you have your existing job with the Navy, so it's not like you're relying on this, that you have to make it and you don't have debt, so you can take it at a pace that works for you. I mean, that's what everybody wants, isn't it, from their job?
Yeah. Well, we're looking at maybe getting our own canning machine this year, but a small one. So yeah. I only can then on, because at the minute, packaging's our biggest cost. So I look at it going, well, what can I do? So if I buy the packaging setup, get my cans pre-made, of course, or we go back to labels, you know, but at the end of the day, because at the minute we get them printed for us, and then we get, well, and like a pallet's worth. And it's quite costly, so I just want to revisit that and try the labels and see if it makes a difference. Because at the end of the day, still a good beer, and as long as the label looks nice,
yeah,
surely gets it over the line. Although the spray on the printed can does look a bit more, you know, like you're up there with the big guns, you know.
Yeah,
but one little move this year, I can see from an advancement to packaging, I think, is our next. And then, my daughter, she's 18. She's looking to go to uni doing graphic design. So I'm like, let's get your portfolio, get it up to scratch, and you start get it under the family. Free labor.
Nothing like child labor. That's why you have kids. Exactly. They have to pay back all the investment, don't they?
100%. Well, that's all them nappies. All them nappies, you know. All
So you're settled down there. You're growing it at a nice little clip that you're happy with. Do you see anything? You don't see anything major changing in the next year. Like it'll be, but it's also sort of like if something pops up, you're going to grab it with both hands. Like you won't let it go past.
I think so, but at the same time, I've had people interested, investors again, but I'm kind of going, I do look at the bigger picture and go, well, actually, but with all the costs of the overheads, just at this moment in time, it's not that sustainable to run a brewery. Never mind, you know, that's just a realistic picture right now. And I think I'm just going to keep my head down and just make money, not spend money, you know. Is what I'm trying to get at. Just keep it simple. I can keep making good beers, you know. And there's a few things have happened over here. There's some of the bigger independent breweries that have world Australian famous top of the range beers, and they're all going into liquidation. So it has me looking at the picture, going, well, hold on, what are they doing wrong, you know? But and a lot of it's just overcapitalized, all these overheads, and they've gone into it in debt. So if you're going into it in debt and you're growing, it's definitely close. You're not going to catch up. It's always going to be there, you know, and if not, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
So these are I've got no business acumen at all, but I do have a good vision, you know. A visionary there, you know. I can see a wee bit clear what we want to avoid, you know.
Yeah, because I've had a few people say that to me, you know, that it's all great having your own brewery that you can make a huge amount of beer, but the big problem is you've got to sell it at the end. Like it's all great producing it, but you know, and then you've got your debt, so you have to sell it to kind of fund the debt or the investors, which means you have to brew more, and you're just in this horrible cycle that sooner or later just falls apart. Like
100%, and you can get investors all you want, but it's. You're just putting a band-aid on it. You're not fixing the problem, you know. So I just like keeping the options open and just seeing where I can put this, you know. An example. I'm thinking beef jerky and stuff. You know, I've got a bit of beef jerky from the father-in-law. He's a retired butcher.
Okay.
And I sell quite a bit of it here and there, just, you know, as a package with the beer and stuff. I was really thinking if I put that as a... And with the cellar doors on, that could really sort of bolster, you know, something like that could be the breadwinner, you know.
Yeah.
Of just, and that's the draw card, and that could make push us into production then in our own facilities, you know.
Yeah.
But it's seven years in, and we're now thinking, what, another 3 will hit the 10-year mark. Have another good review of it and go look. This is, we just keep doing what we're doing, you know, and as long as I enjoy it, you know, I really get a buzz out of being there and lifting these bags of barley up on top of the thing and then getting the trailer and taking them out to the cows and feeding the cows and, you know, it's just, and you're out there, people walking past and you just 35-degree sweating buckets and you know, all the that you've been drinking the past few days are just dripping out of you.
But like you said, it could be that or golf, you know.
I think it's golf seems to be a bit more gentle than, you know. But not me, I lose too many balls, so at least in the brewery I gain some balls.
All right, well, I don't know if he's still here, but like you said, you saw, I'll just pop it up there, we saw Reese Adams, who just you're a legend, so
So Reese is one of my Welsh. We used to live together. So Yaki Da to Reese Boyle, and he lives in Queensland now, per bugger, up in Brisbane. So he seems to be enjoying life up there. You better come down to Sydney or Mudgee soon and catch up. That's what I say.
Yeah, well, he can help you with the drugs, drinking those.
But
jugs.
Yeah, well, it was sort of. He can help us with what?
Drinking the jugs. The testing.
Oh, he's the man. If there's any man that can do it, like, he's definitely, and he'll probably have a guitar there too. Right. So we can sing a few at the same time, you know. So, But yeah, look, there's a couple of other guys have been sort of putting it out there to keep an eye on it, but it's just sort of everyone's still on holidays here. Like Christmas here goes, it's like our summer in the UK, in Ireland, you know, where the school is a month and a half.
All right.
So they're all, so this is the big holiday. So people are away doing whatever. But we stayed in Mudgee this year and had a, you know what? I didn't miss the cold weather, you know, at all. I feel like I can't go back to Derry at Christmas. It's just,
Well, it's cold at the moment, so yeah, stay away a few more months. Yeah, just I don't know who, if you also know Craig Ellison, but he just said well done, so there.
Cheers, Craig. So Reese has gone to bed already.
Must be. All right, David. Look, thanks a million for the time. It was a great chat. I really enjoyed learning more about Mudgee and about how you ended up down there. But no, it sounds like you know what you're doing, and you're enjoying it, and it's also paying its way. So I mean, geez, what more do you want, really?
Exactly. And then I've got unlimited, you know, I said, worst case scenario, I'm knee deep in beer.
That's your retirement sort. Your retirement beers.
That's an Irish wish, that one. May your knees be filled to beer, with beer, you know. Or something like that, you know.
All right. Well,
thank you for having us as well. And happy new year. And look, hey, let's keep in touch. And
yep.
If, you know, anything significant, I'll definitely give you a yell as well, and we can go from there. If you're ever over, come over and we'll look after you.
Brilliant. I might try it someday, probably, but like you said, maybe I'll have to work out the temperatures first, because I have not adjusted to hot temperatures, unlike you.
Yeah. Nah, fair enough. Now, some of the days there was like 40, I think it hit 40 degrees one day. It was like,
Can't 20 is as much as I can do, really. Might stretch perfect. It to 25.
Yeah, perfect pub weather, isn't it? You have to get it all cool, get in there, call and drink some cold beer.
All right, David, I'll let you go. Like I said, thanks a million. Keep in touch, and hopefully we'll have a chat again soon. And we might get to see a picture of your horse and cart.
Fantastic. And do you have this recorded on your thing as well?
Yeah, it'll be it should be on YouTube and that now, as soon as I finish here. And then I'll put it on as a podcast audio thing by Thursday, probably.
Yeah. Should we get some subtitles for the Aussies?
I don't know. You'll have to decide that. All right. Listen, bye.
Take it easy. All the best. Bye.
Bye.
Hi. This,